at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the April 6th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Voice of America.
The Voice of America is once again a proud broadcasting partner of the Men's Basketball Africa League, or BAL, which resumes its third season on April 26th when Nile Conference games tip off in Cairo, Egypt. The BAL is a partnership between the National Basketball Association, the NBA, and the International Basketball Federation, FIBA. Joining me now for some NBA talk is my VOA colleague, McBill Yabarrow. Sporty greetings, McBill.
Sporty greetings, Sonny.
You remind me, McBill, coming up, more Nothing But Net with McBill and Sonny. We got to keep it real.
Absolutely. Super exciting. It's been an amazing BAL season so far. The Nile Conference is coming up. And if it's anything like the Sahara Conference, it will be action-packed.
Yes. And speaking of action-packed, the NBA season is winding down in terms of the regular season. And that's where they basically rate the players in terms of the big awards. The big award is the MVP, Most Valuable Player. And on the show this week, McBill, Doc Rivers was saying, I'm biased, but there's really only one guy who deserves that award. It's Cameroonian star Joel Embiid.
The MVP race is over. Tonight we couldn't make shots. We had guys making shots, would open shots. The man just scored half our points in the NBA game. And I'm biased, but the MVP race is over.
Your thoughts?
I would definitely have to agree. I think Joel Embiid has shown us that time and time again, he is that perennial all-star for the Philadelphia 76ers, and he's a dominating big man. For the last three seasons, you could argue and say that he could have been a potential MVP. I believe he was runner-up for the last 2 years as well, or in that conversation, having lost to Nikola Jokic twice, and he is also another big man in the conversation, as well as Giannis Antetokounmpo, both Giannis and Nikola Jokic being two-time MVP winners. Joel Embiid has not won one yet. Can he join the conversation this year, Sonny?
Yeah, you know, interesting you bring up the big men, McBill, because we're not really talking about Steph Curry and the guards. In recent years, in terms of the MVP, it has been the big men.
It has been. I think it shows the level of play that the big men have had to adjust to. Throughout the years, it's been a guard-dominating game, but the bigs now are so much more talented. They're no longer your traditional old school bigs of the 90s. They can shoot the three ball. You can see Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic shooting the three ball at a high clip on a regular day. These are seven-footers.
Amazing.
It's crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, one change that will go into effect next year, it's part of the collective bargaining agreement, is that in order to be considered for one of these major awards, including the MVP, you have to play at least 65 games. As we talk, Embiid right at that 65-game figure. What about, you know, that aspect, McBill, that he's missed a few games this season?
You know, I think there's a difference between the players that miss games that are just more injury prone or are trying to be injury preventative measures versus the load management, right? I really don't like the load management thing. And I think a lot of players nowadays, Anthony Edwards, a young player, a young star, came out and said, honestly, I feel like if I was paying my hard-earned money to come and watch somebody play and they're load managing. You know, it's pretty unfortunate. And some of our fans, some of the NBA fans are like that, right? Where you're just saving money for your kids and your family to go watch their favorite player. Mm. And their favorite player is load managing. Kind of takes away from the fan perspective. So I definitely like the fact that they put that clause in there. If you're a serious player and you want to play and you're not injured, you're going to have to play over 65 games. I like it.
Joel Embiid certainly boosted his case for MVP this week with a 52-point outburst against the Boston Celtics. Philadelphia won that game 103-101. Where does that performance rate, Muckbill, in the NBA history books?
I believe he is the first person to... first player since Wilt Chamberlain to put up 50-plus points and 10 rebounds on 80% efficiency from the field. Mm. He shot 20 for 25. That is an astronomical feat. And he really was playing the game super fluid. He scored half, if not a little more than half, the points for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, as Doc Rivers said, and as a lot of media personnel that are going to be voting for the MVP have mentioned, they think that the MVP conversation got locked down with the 52-point performance by Joel. We will have to wait and see, Sonny.
Now, right here in Washington, Muckbill, Giannis was doing his thing against the Washington Wizards. Another triple-double for Giannis. Some say that Giannis might be a better leader than Joel Embiid. What do you think?
I think that, you know, you can definitely make that argument because Giannis has had the, I wouldn't say the advantage, but has won a championship, right? When you're a championship caliber team and then you not only live up to expectations, but you go there and do it and get it done, and you're just not the MVP caliber guy who's not getting it done for the entire team, then you can be looked at as one of the best leaders in the entire NBA. Joel needs to not only, he shouldn't be worrying too much about the MVP race. He should be worrying about making sure that the Philadelphia 76ers get a little further than he's gotten in the playoffs. And they have a really good team this year. So it'll be interesting to see where they go.
Do you think Jokic out west still warrants consideration in this MVP talk?
I believe he does, you know, because statistically, year after year, he just keeps getting better. So if you said that he had the ability to be MVP for the last two seasons, he's only gotten better from there. So one could make the argument that he still should be the MVP. But I think there's so many different dynamics. There's been years where LeBron had a stretch of like 6 or 7 years where he was the most valuable player in hindsight, but he didn't really get every single year. Like, he didn't get the vote every single year. So sometimes the NBA is all about, you know, making sure that, you know, it's not the same guy who's constantly getting the award and showcasing that there are so many more talented players all around the NBA that that can help their team get far. But I think Nikola Jokic's most important thing this year will be to make sure that the Nuggets go deep into the playoffs and make that run for the championship. As he is a two-time MVP winner, the pressure is on him.
Now, theoretically, you could be the best player in the NBA, throw up gaudy statistics, and play on a losing team. Does it matter that you have to be on a winning team to win the MVP award?
I think for years, this has been such a very big conversation, right? You have years where the top player or the best player on the best team, like Steph Curry, for instance, in the years where Golden State was number one, would get the MVP, and maybe LeBron is like third or fourth in the East, but he had a better statistical season. But, you know, they go with Steph. Then you have other years where Russell Westbrook has that triple-double monstrous season where I believe OKC was like sixth or seventh.
Right.
And he still
right.
gets MVP, because without Russell, that team is a lottery pick.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, sometimes I'm not too sure what everyone is thinking, but I think there are so many different things to put into consideration. But Nikola Jokic with the number one team on the West, and then you have Giannis on this side with the number one team on the East, and then you got the big man from Cameroon who's just putting up big numbers.
Yes.
For Philly. Without him, that Philly team kind of looks like a lottery team, too.
Yeah. And, you know, from a numbers point, though, yeah. Mukbil, Jokic has won it twice.
Yeah.
Giannis has won it twice.
Right.
And you know, I think maybe there is some sentiment to give it to somebody that hasn't won it. And I'm thinking about our friend Peter Prinsloo for the Cape Town Tigers.
Right.
He's a big Joel Embiid fan. He thinks he should have won it last year, as do some other NBA fans.
Yeah, I think the argument could have been made last year. But like you mentioned, to me, Giannis winning two times, and if Giannis was having the same type of season that Joel or Jokic was having, I think he could have gotten it because he is a champion already as well. But Jokic, to me, it's like he has had the time to develop and make sure that his team gets to that next level, and they've kind of been bumped, you know. So I want to see Jokic take these Nuggets because he is a great, great superstar. He's now got to perform in the playoffs, whereas Joel hasn't had that type of pressure because he hasn't won the MVP just yet. Now, when you win an MVP or two, you now have to get that next thing, and that's what Giannis went and did for the Bucks. But Jokic has got to get it done for the Nuggets.
One last player I want to put his name out there, Jason Tatum for the Celtics. In terms of height, little smaller than Giannis and Jokic and Embiid, but he's had a great season for the Celtics.
Oh, absolutely. And I think with his team, it's a very young team, but they play so well together. Having got to the finals last year, they just missed it. I think they will be very excited in wanting to get back there. He has so much talent around him as well, with Jaylen Brown being another superstar. They're a very good 1-2 punch. Another defensive player of the year last year, Marcus Smart. He has so many different types of players that make that team a great young team, and I think they will be a presence in the East for years to come. So we'll see if they can get the job done this year, but it is not going to be easy for anyone coming out the East.
No, I mean, in terms of the East, right now we got the Bucks at the top, Sixers and Celtics right there with them almost. It's shaping up as a very competitive playoffs.
Yeah, no, I like it a lot. Now, honorary mention on the West Coast is the Sacramento Kings. First playoff berth in about 15 years.
Wow.
Since 2006, they have not been in the playoffs. And my goodness, are their fan base excited and ready to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mukbil Yabberow hitting nothing but net. Thanks, Mukbil.
Yeah, appreciate it, Sonny. Thanks for having me.
On Wednesday night in the NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks, with Giannis Antetokounmpo sitting out with a knee injury, clinched the number one overall seed in the upcoming NBA playoffs. And the Boston Celtics clinched the number two seed. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
The Bucks' 105-92 win over the Bulls gives Milwaukee the top seed in the NBA playoffs. Bobby Portis, Brooke Lopez, and Jrue Holiday each had at least 20 points as the Bucks won without Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was ruled out with a knee injury. Portis finished with 27 points and 13 rebounds.
I like shooting the ball, so you know what I'm saying? A couple guys out, I know there's a lot more shots out there, so I get to be a little bit more aggressive.
Lopez had 26 points, and Holiday added 20 points, 15 assists, and 8 rebounds. The Bulls led by 10 in the third quarter before falling. The Celtics secured the second seed in the East with a 97-93 downing of the Raptors. Boston won it without Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, and Al Horford. Malcolm Brogdon scored a team-high 29 points, including a pair of late free throws.
It's just all about leadership. You know, we got a lot of guys, veteran guys, who've been here and done it before, so it's that time of the year. We just got to get each other going.
Jaylen Brown chipped in 25 points and 11 rebounds, while Derek White added 17 points. Pascal Siakam had 18 points and 11 boards for Toronto, which shot just 6 of 33 from three-point range. I'm Dave Ferry.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Sporty greetings. This is Liz Mills, head coach of Abidjan Basketball Club of Côte d'Ivoire. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. You can follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports and other VOA programs. Check out voaafrica.com.
Tell your friends about VOA Africa, music, sports, and news.
And of course, tell your friends about the Sunny Side of Sports. Two-time Commonwealth Games triple jump medalist Thea LaFond of Dominica is hoping to leap to greater distances at this year's World Championships in Budapest and next year's Olympics in Paris. I caught up with Thea recently at her mother's house just outside Washington, D.C., and I asked Thea how she became interested in athletics.
Well, shout out to my mom, because my mom and dad had a rule that I was not allowed to be in the house after high school, straight after school. I had to find something, some kind of extracurricular to keep me going. Before high school, I was doing dance, ballet, tap, jazz, things that my local elementary and middle school used to provide. But in high school, my mom, realizing that there were a lot of extracurriculars that were free, changed the game. So I played volleyball for the first fall season. But after that, a bunch of my friends were doing track, and they just kind of talked me into doing it. And I always say that, you know, I got lucky that I had some really good peer pressure in my corner. And that's how I got into track. They talked me into doing it. And, you know, over 10 years later, I'm the one that stuck with it. The last one to join it is the one that stuck with it and made it into her career. And so that was it. Yeah.
I'm talking with Thea LaFond, two-time Commonwealth Games medalist, and go back to outside of the Commonwealth Games, Thea. I know you've also won other medals. Talk about those.
Oh, it's been really, really cool. I mean, I just got a gold medal from the North America, Central America, and Caribbean Games in the Bahamas last year. And that was awesome. Any opportunity I have to get a gold for Dominica, oh my goodness. It is such a blessing. It truly is. And there have just been a number of meets that, you know, I've felt very proudly of and been able to shine for this country. And I really do think that every time I compete, it's an extension of my country. And so I do it with a lot of pride, a lot of privilege, a lot of just, like heartwarming feelings. But I am grateful. And, you know, winning that Diamond League in Morocco was awesome. First Dominican to win a Diamond League. And, you know, that country cheers me on so hard from wherever I am, you know? And surprisingly, a Dominican always finds their way into a stadium. And they are there cheering this little girl on, little island girl on. So I'm grateful.
In terms of cheering you on, Thea, I know they also kind of rewarding you, haven't they, lately? Talk about that, the financial rewards you've received from your home country.
Yeah. Well, I will say it really stems all the way down to the Dominica Olympic Committee, which have done a great job just funding me, monthly funding, which was actually allowed me to stop teaching and actually focus completely on track, and being able to make that transition opened so many more doors. I mean, it's clear correlation with me being able to focus on this sport and me doing better in this sport. But last year I was gifted by the Dominican government $200,000 EC dollars, which is roughly around 75K USD. And it's honestly was the, I'm already just baffled talking about it. It set a new wave of appreciation from the country, by the country, to sports. I think a lot of times in the Caribbean, athletics are seen as just a hobby and not as a career. And in them investing in me and rewarding me, I think showed a lot of other young athletes, especially young female athletes, that there is a future in this sport. It can be more than just a hobby. It can be a platform to see the world, to do extra amazing things. But that funding really is a game changer. I mean, for me, being a young adult who just got married, it's also like, oh, can I now possibly even afford a home? I mean, the dynamic that has created has been something that's just been mind-blowing, and I am truly, truly grateful.
Thea, how important is it for sponsorship at your current level for supporting your professional athletics career?
Sponsorships are huge. They are, for a lot of people, their bread and butter. Because outside of your sport, well, let's bring it this way. Your sport is, of course, you know, your entire platform, and you've got to figure out a way to monetize that. It could be just prize money for meets or appearance fees. It could be sponsorships or partnerships. But sponsorships are massive because it's incoming money that is not necessarily directly correlated with how well you do at a meet, right? Okay. So it's an extra fallback to make sure that even if things go wrong, you'll be okay, you know? A lot of independent athletes, especially track athletes, are not as lucrative as, say, the NFL or the NBA, where we have massive, you know, seven, maybe eight-figure contracts. So sponsorships really help just cushion anything, the falls, and they're kind of like our bread and butter.
Thea, I know the big event this year is Budapest, the World Championships. What does your training schedule look like ahead of Budapest?
Oh, well, we are busy. I just took a little vacation to actually get ready for the amount of work I'll be launching into, where I already have a launched into, actually. So right now we're doing 6 days a week training, 4 days on the track, 4 days in the weight room. Sundays are my rest days. We will be opening up our season, and most likely in Florida, and just all gears going, getting ready for Budapest. We've placed top five in the last two worlds, and we are ready for top three.
Wow. Yeah. So you want to make it to the podium?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I've got a good chip on my shoulder. Right now, I am actually out of contract. I was with Adidas, and I'm out of contract, and I am ready to just kind of show, like, hey, I'm the one you're missing out on.
Corporate sponsors, if you're listening, Thea, she's ready.
Ready.
She's enough. Ready for some backing, right?
Yes, sir.
You've had a chance to travel all over the world in your career. Who are some of your favorite female athletes outside of the triple jump?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go straight to tennis. I remember my first Olympics running into Venus and Serena Williams.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was just in awe of, like, the power. Like, these women just exuded, like, confidence and power and just pride. And I think just, like, being in their presence gave me, like, goosebumps. But being able to speak with them for even a little bit and just talking about our sports and seeing how passionate they are about theirs just really made me even more passionate about what I did. And I remember Venus telling me, like, you know, girl, like, you're young, you're smart, you're talented, and don't you forget that. And I was like, whoa, whoa. Well, who am I to forget that when Venus Williams just told me that? And I think that was an amazing, amazing encounter. Another athlete I really enjoyed meeting was Simone Biles.
Getting back to Serena, I did a lot of coverage when it looks like she's retired. She hasn't announced that she's coming back at this point. As an athlete, what did Serena mean for women of color to pick up a racket?
Wow. I think that Serena told us that this space was for us too. When you looked at professional tennis, I think for years, even myself being a little girl, I saw it as a very European sport. And when Serena broke out onto the scene, and every time she stepped on the court, she was undeniably herself, right? Whether it was braids, whether it was that iconic denim look, like she has never, ever shied away from being a proud Black and talented woman in her sport. She never changed herself to fit the more, I guess at the moment, European-centric view of the sport. She faced ridicule for being, you know, aggressive looking or strong looking, manly looking. I mean, I'll never forget being a young girl and watching the comics make fun of her, even comparing her to like animals or monkeys or such. And to watch the level of grace that she took everything with and still came out every time to be dominant on the court. At the end of the day, no one could say that she wasn't a GOAT in her sport. And I think that was massive.
Still with the money issue, Thea, I know the U.S. women's soccer team, they recently, I think they won their case for equal pay, same as the men's national team. Do you see other women's sports moving into that parity mode with their male counterparts?
I think I do. And I do think that it's a change that I'm excited to see. I think for too long, women's sports have been viewed as less than when some of the most talented and dynamic players I've ever seen have been women. I'm ready to see women's basketball, the WNBA, step up and start matching NBA contracts. I mean, we look at everything that happened with Brittany Griner and we can judge her for what was or wasn't in her luggage. By the end of the day, if she was making more money, she wouldn't have any to be overseas.
That's right.
And be in that situation in the first place. And for a country that screams like equality for all, we are definitely not okay with making sure that financial equality is a priority. And I do want to see more women being taken as serious as their men, male counterparts. And I don't think that it's crazy for that to be a thing.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young. You're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm talking with world-class triple jumper Thea LaFond. Thea, what do you think are the biggest issues facing female athletes right now at the professional level?
I think one of the big ones we already talked about, which is just the pay gap. Being able to make a livelihood on your sport is massive. But I also think just the coverage of women's sports, it plays a huge deal. You know, it's one thing to say that women don't get enough money. A lot of the arguments is like, well, you know, a lot of people don't watch women's sports. How much of it is on TV? Is it as easy to catch an NBA game as to catch a WNBA game? Are people speaking about it at the same level when you turn on the TV to ESPN as they are male games? Like, are we creating a society that's actually acknowledging women enough for the rest of the world to actually feel like they care? Because the truth of it is that society is going to often mimic what they see in the media, right? The media helps influence the world, which is why we care so much about it. And so if we're not tying in important women issues and women in sports issues into the media at least the same percentage as we're cranking out the male issues and male news, then we're short-sighting our women.
That's Thea LaFond, two-time Commonwealth Games medalist in the women's triple jump. And Thea spoke with me at her mother's house just outside Washington, D.C.
that wraps up the April 6th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.